The image of young Emmett Till, beaten, mutilated, left to drown, dragged from the mud of the Tallahatchie River, his corpse put on display in Chicago, generated the anger and fury that united the civil rights movement in America in the 1950s. But the parallel image of a beautiful brunette woman from Mississippi has remained in the shadows. The woman who Emmett Till was said to have flirted with, or insulted, or encountered, or grabbed, or even attempted to rape, has never spoken publicly since she testified in court that Till was a beast who tried to harm her in a general store in Money, Mississippi in 1955, while he was on a visit to relatives from Chicago. But Carolyn Bryant Dunham has finally reached out to a historian and author to settle something about this brutal murder. Till's mother always maintained that there was nothing that could have justified Emmett's death. In admitting that she lied about what happened that day, Carolyn Bryant and Emmett Till's mother find themselves suddenly in agreement. A tragedy worthy of Shakespeare. Told by Timothy Tyson, senior research scholar at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University and author of The Blood of Emmett Till.
This story of Emmett Till that I tell in The Blood of Emmett Till has been told as a kind of Southern horror movie starring redneck Frankenstein, you know. But that's a narrative that gets everybody off the hook because nobody thinks of themselves as redneck Frankenstein. So it becomes a self-congratulatory interpretation. We're so, you know, morally superior to that when, in fact, the social system in which that happened was made it inevitable. And the people who supported that social system were many. And the people who did nothing about it, you know, all over the country, for whom Mississippi and the Deep South was a faraway land in which maybe terrible things happened that had nothing to do with them. And, of course, this showed that Chicago and Mississippi were not such distant worlds.
Carolyn Bryant Dunham, in this particular case, how hard was she to find? How hard was she to
get? She found me.
Yeah.
My previous book, Blood Don't Sign My Name, I got a phone call from a woman who wanted to talk about how much she liked Blood Don't Sign My Name. I was being polite and thanking her and getting off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, well, my mother-in-law is coming next week. We'd really like to have a cup of coffee with you, which I pretended she hadn't said. And she said, well, you may know about my mother-in-law. Her name was Carolyn Bryant. And, of course, I'm a historian of the African-American freedom struggle. I'm a historian of the South. I'm a historian of the United States in the 20th century. Like everybody of that description, I knew that Carolyn Bryant had never given an interview since 1955. And most of the time, we've not been able to even find her.
Your heart stopped.
Yeah. So definitely I could find it in my schedule to talk to her. And I originally just intended to take an interview with her, which was what they asked for. And put it in the archive because that's my job. I was working on another project. But when I started preparing for the interview, I began to realize that though this is a familiar story, it's not actually known, very well known, and that the history is largely untrue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we learn a lot from her. So that's one new source. But there was also the FBI had reopened the case in 2005. There was a transcript of the trial that had been disappeared in 1955 that we now have. There was an FBI report on this, which debunks all previous accounts. But what she told her attorney immediately after this happened, just after her husband and brother-in-law had been arrested for murder, what she told her attorney was that he had insulted her. In court, she describes the black beast rapist, you know, someone who grabbed her forcefully, you know, but in her account to her lawyer, there's no mention of anything physical, menacing, threatening, sexual. This becomes someone who violated 1955 rural Mississippi racial etiquette, perhaps, and somebody who was obnoxiously playful, as 14-year-old boys have a way of being.
And she said to you,
yeah.
What? The same?
No. She's speaking of the physical assault part. She said that part's not true.
Did you ask her why she remained silent and didn't, in court, contradict what she knew was a lie?
Not really. I wanted to know, when she said that didn't happen, what I wanted to know was what did happen. And she said, I would really like to tell you, to be honest, I don't know. I don't remember. It was more than 50 years ago. And then she said something very telling, I think. She said, you tell these stories until they seem true, but that part's not true. You know, we tell stories about ourselves that we come to believe, but that part's not true.
Could Carolyn Bryant Dunham have shut the whole thing down, stopped it? Could she have said, wait a minute?
No.
Are you sure?
I think if Carolyn Bryant Dunham had stood up in court and said, there's nothing that boy did that could ever justify what happened to him, which is what she said, you know, in 2008.
Could she have stood up before that and prevented his murder?
In her account, and actually the body of evidence supports this, she didn't tell her husband what had happened. She didn't want what happened to happen. At first, she did not tell her husband. Her husband and brother-in-law found out about this from somebody who hung around at the store. And her husband was furious at her. But they would have been acquitted. Their acquittal or conviction did not hang in the balance. They confessed to kidnapping, and they weren't indicted for kidnapping. So, you know, that was embedded in the culture. And in that political moment, which was in a huge revolt against Brown versus Board of Education, there were voting rights activists in Mississippi that were being assassinated. He was about the fourth or fifth person that summer who was killed in this wave of white supremacist violence in Mississippi. In some ways, he's what military people might call collateral damage in a conflict about school integration and voting rights. We are still battling for school integration and voting rights in this country.
You're going to get hammered. There are going to be people who say, why bring this up now? We don't need this in America. We're past this. I was in Oklahoma last week talking about the echoes of slavery that exist in some of the violence that we're experiencing. And people said, get over it. It's time to get over it. We're over it. You're bringing it back up. Why are you doing that? How are you going to respond?
I'm going to say that would be nice, but let's talk about Walter Scott. Let's talk about Eric Garner. Let's talk about Trayvon Martin. Let's talk about Sandra Bland. What is it? We're surrounded by brutal tragedy, by that is rooted in white supremacy, that is rooted in a world in which Black lives don't matter to folks as much as they should, and in which the first thing we try to do is find fault. You know, with Emmett Till, immediately there's an effort to smear him and to blame him, you know, to make him something other than a 14-year-old boy who had a harmless encounter, did nothing wrong. And so, we can see this on tape, and yet we still, you know, a lot of people want to blame, and a lot of people want to deny that we've got a problem. And what we see all across the country is people rising up in a national movement that demands to be heard.
But we just elected a president, Mr. Tyson, who, is all about the voices of white lives who believe they don't matter. And you're missing out. You don't see them. And that's what's going on in America today, pal.
Yeah. Well, the enemies of the civil rights movement in its ascended to power after the civil rights movement, riding a wave of white backlash. We see that again. Donald Trump's program, his mode of political communication, harkens back to George Wallace, harkens back to the Southern strategy of Richard Nixon, in which the White South becomes the stronghold of the Republican Party, rooted in objections to, fear of the civil rights movement, fear of changing gender roles in society, fear of the basic building blocks of the country being moved around. I think that's what we're seeing today. But it's a backlash against a challenge to the authority of white men.
Timothy Tyson, senior research scholar at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University and author of the book The Blood of Emmett Till.